there is something about this kind of perimenopausal anxiety that I have firsthand experience of, and how anxiety forms a really uncomfortable bridge between how things are and how we would like them to be. That's why I see anxiety as a helpful signal. So what I would say is there are two options in life: to change something or to accept it. That dangerous middle ground is where we resist it.
Well, you might recognise Emma Reid Turrell as the voice of podcast Best Friend Therapy with Elizabeth Day. And she's here to help us figure out how to stop repeating the same patterns of unhelpful behaviour over and over again. This podcast is the Liz Our Wellbeing Show, the one that helps us all have a better second half. I'm Liz Earle, and it's my mission to find ways for all of us to thrive in later life by investing in our health and our well-being today. Now, if you found yourself having the same issues at work over the years, even though the environment has changed, are you caught in the same arguments at home every weekend? Have you noticed that your friend always seems to have the same problem with all the different men she dates? Well, Emma's job as a therapist is to help us notice what we haven't spotted about ourselves yet. After all, as hard a pill as it might be to swallow, who is the common denominator in all of your issues? Yeah, it's you. Well, Emma is one of the UK's best love therapists. And after 15 years of treating clients, she's written a book called What Am I Missing? To show us how to free ourselves of the unconscious blind spots that cloud our minds and damage our relationships. Now, these blind spots are essentially gaps in our awareness that compound over time and create misconceptions like, my needs aren't important, or I can't trust anyone but myself. So I'm interested to know what Emma thinks my blind spot is. But how do we break these cycles in our minds? How do we rewrite our own stories? And how do we take back control of our own lives instead of repeating the same patterns over and over again?
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Well, welcome, Emma. And, you know, I'm so interested in this idea that we get caught repeating the same patterns across our lifetime. I think I'm feeling brave enough to get your take on what you think my blind spot might be a little bit later on. But first, can you explain in principle what these blind spots are and why you feel they're a useful way to frame a therapy session or at least a bit of self-reflection?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Liz, and for that fantastic introduction. It really is this common denominator piece. I think that's where it boils down to for me, because there's something about spending 15 years in a therapy room with clients coming in day after day, all asking the same question. What am I missing? Mm. This is that feeling we keep getting. And I'm certainly somebody who understands that feeling. It's this thing, it just keeps happening. I keep falling over this same obstacle. Like you said, at work, I keep coming up against the same conflict with my mother-in-law. I don't know why I continue to put myself at the bottom of the pile. There must be something I'm missing. What is it? And I found blind spots such a great way to access this, almost like flickers in our peripheral vision that say, yeah. Oh, I don't think I've actually paid attention to that before. That might be important.
And so is it the case then that you often notice the same patterns of behaviours in the issues that people come to you with? You know, they might ostensibly be talking about a problem in their work life, maybe something in their relationship too, but their concerns are ultimately coming from the same place.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I would kind of split it down into two sections. One would be very much similar patterns, as in socioeconomic, cultural, big, large-scale cultural issues. Let's take the pandemic, for example. Suddenly, the pandemic was the backdrop to so many blind spots that people suddenly became aware of. So there's that way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it, which I take readers through in the book, is a four-profile view of blind spots. So again, this is over the kind of 10,000 plus hours of client work I've done, noticing that people were falling into these four broad categories of ways that they were distorting their reality and getting stuck.
And I was interested to read in your book that the research on implicit memory suggests that a past experience can influence future responses, even without an explicit memory of the event. So in understanding how our patterns of behaviour become so entrenched, do we need an understanding of that concept that's called cognitive bias? I think that's a term that was coined in the 1970s.
Absolutely. It's fascinating, Liz. Really is this part of our brain that we have no awareness of, which I still find strange. And I've been doing this work for a long time. But the fact that my brain is making shortcuts and assumptions and inferences and interpretations all the time without me even noticing, well, it blows my mind. And I think if you kind of think about this idea that 11 million units of information are coming at us every second, and our brain has the capacity to process around about 40. So we can see that from a kind of evolutionary perspective, we wouldn't really be around if we were still stopping to take a second look and really try and run through those scenarios in the kind of detail that our brains might be able to. So they do make this really smart jump. They take us from A to B, and how they get there will always be the quickest, most familiar, most frequently encountered thought or conclusion, which is really, in the book I call it your thought superhighways. This is that bit where if you imagine yourself having a thought, and I put it into three categories, the thoughts that we have most often, the thoughts that we're most attached to, and the thoughts that represent risk. These are our kind of thought hierarchy systems that our brains run without us even knowing it. So if you're used to having a thought, you will find that thought before any other thought. Great if it's a helpful, productive thought. Not so great if it means that you end up always being picked last for a promotion, or always having that same discussion with a friend that leaves you feeling disappointed. So it's these thought superhighways that are a result of blind spots that mean we quite often find ourselves doing what we've always done and getting what we've always got, whether we like it or not.
And presumably our brains think they serve a purpose then, that it's actually quite helpful for us to default to that.
Yeah, and of course it is. It definitely is. It's really helpful for our brain to pick up risk subconsciously before we actually notice it. So we don't necessarily need to see a fire to understand that actually the smell of smoke is something that we should be alert to. We don't necessarily need to see a predator, but we hear a rustle in the bush and that's enough for us to pay close attention. So there is something about the shortcuts that it makes on a very primal evolutionary basis that are great. They're just not so helpful when it comes to prejudice or unconscious bias in the workplace or inequality. These are the places where we can see that we've ended up making these preconceptions into absolutes. And unless we stop and challenge them, we run the risk of living a lifetime drawing two and two and making five.
Yeah, but because we're missing something. And I love the title of your book, by the way, What Am I Missing? You know, I can just imagine the exasperation of clients who come to you at their wit's end saying, you know, what on earth am I missing here? But I think there's also a bravery, isn't there, in asking for an outside perspective. Presumably that's a first step, isn't it, of any kind of therapy, knowing that there is something that we don't know yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think societally, I've certainly noticed over the last couple of decades that that's so much less taboo for people to recruit this, you know, impartial third party, qualified, experienced professional that they can take a problem to. In the past, I might have seen more clients who were able to name a problem, and it would have to be, you know, a bona fide problem that is valid to take to therapy. These days, I quite often have clients who'll say, I don't really know why I'm here. I just kind of know that something's not working for me right now. And I'm pretty sure I'm missing something and things could be better. And that for me speaks volumes as to how culturally we've become more open to therapy. You know, why shouldn't you come and workshop that with someone who's trained to ask different questions and see things differently?
Absolutely. Do you know, I mean, I was having a cup of coffee just this morning with a guy, a friend of mine, who's a quite a senior BBC producer. And we were talking, you know, chit-chatting about general stuff. And I was asking about something. And he said, oh, that's really interesting, because actually I was talking about that with my therapist the other day. You know, and he just said that in such a matter-of-fact way.
I love that.
It was not kind of, oh, actually, do you know what? Hushed voice. I actually see a therapist. And we talked about it. And it was just completely normal. Like he was saying, yeah, you know, I was talking about that to my babysitter or my neighbour.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the coffee guy or whatever. I guess moving on from the kind of emotional, mental side of it, I'd just love to cover off whether physical complaints, you know, things like headaches and low-level nausea, constant exhaustion, these things that so many of us kind of are plagued by, is that perhaps a sign that there's a blind spot that also needs investigating?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a firm believer that body and mind are, you know, well, they are one, aren't they? And it's kind of funny, but helpful when we talk about the brain as if it's almost a separate part of us. Of course it isn't. Of course it is us. But I think that there is something about hearing what your body's trying to tell you when you haven't been able to cognitively spot the blind spot. So that idea of actually, I had clients who'll come to me and they aren't there because, let's say, they're anxious. They're there because their doctor has told them actually that these stomach ulcers are not to be ignored, or they're there because actually they're having panic attacks. And it's only when a paramedic reassured them that it wasn't a heart attack that they started to pay attention to what else might be going on. I think often our bodies do a really great job of saying, okay, if you're not going to listen to some of these symptoms, I'm going to shout louder.
Okay, so let's get into this. Can you give us a top line of the four profiles that you feel people tend to fall into? And then, you know, why understanding roughly which of these categories we might fall into could be helpful going forward?
Absolutely. And, you know, the caveat is my four categories. And in my first book, Please Yourself, I also used categories. I use them and I am very open about the fact that they are broad brushstroke. They are categories. They are generalizations. I also use them because I think we can really attach to ideas well, better, if we can start, you know, this process of our brains, start kind of chunking the information up and just seeing things in these more general terms. So what I'm not saying is that you are one or the other. What I'm saying is when you read the book, pay attention to the kind of themes that come through. And if you notice the themes, it will give you a direction of travel to go in, not necessarily a destination. So that's my kind of, that's my caveat. The four categories that I've come up with, let's go with them. The first one is the rock. So the rock, this is someone who is, let's say, looking at the positives, because there are always positives about these shortcuts that our brains make. This is someone who, we'll all know, they're strong, they're stable, they're dependable. You can give them responsibility. They'll take responsibility. They're often the one who's got these broad shoulders and this thick skin that means that they are a resource to other people. They are the rock. The downside of being the rock, they can sometimes be a little emotionally unavailable or closed off, a little aloof, cool perhaps. And part of that process is the rock has got really good at either discounting their own feelings, by which I mean they squash them, or prioritizing the feelings of everyone else. So they get busy helping rather than actually resolving their own feelings and needs. That's our rock. For each one of the the groups, the categories, I also identify the primary blind spot. This is the bit where if you were going to whiz to the end of the whole exercise and take right. one thing away, it would be this. And that is, for a rock, their primary blind spot is permission to be vulnerable. Mm. That actually what has got lost into a blind spot, what has disappeared from view for them, is the fact that they have vulnerability. So in those moments we talk about with rocks, please keep your strengths, please play to them, please have that muscle memory, please also don't deny your vulnerability. That's where you're going to be missing out. So that's our rock. Mm-hmm. I speak from experience because I certainly began life as a rock. Yeah. The journey through therapy has, you know, brought me great perspective, which is wonderful. But when push comes to shove and I'm in a crisis, I'll still go pretty rocky.
Yeah, I have to say that does resonate with me a little bit. But I'm definitely feeling that one. Let's look at the other three.
I mean, the fact that you talk so much about a better second half, which I could not be more in support of, and my journey over the last couple of years through perimenopause and starting HRT and actually leaning into a more vulnerable second half, I think that tells us something about that rocky part of us.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay, so the gladiator. The gladiator is our second category. I had great fun naming these categories, as you can tell. The gladiator is determined, focused, somebody who can really thrive in competition, who can really take on challenge and conflict, who is passionate, who's driven. They have this incredible ambition and a single-mindedness that means that they can really get results. It also means that they can sometimes forget to take people with them. It also means that they might not necessarily trust others to be part of their team. So these are quite often the kind of lone wolves that, without the checks and balances, can even come across as a little cutthroat at times, a little too single-minded, verging on selfish.
Yeah.
So those gladiators, when I talk about their primary blind spot, and I should say, this is the category I see least often in therapy, and I think that speaks for itself. They're not necessarily the ones banging on my door saying, hey, I'm really interested in this self-reflection and awareness. Yeah. This is more likely I don't need help, but the people around me do. So when we think about the primary blind spot for that gladiator, then it really is about empathy. It's about the ability to lean into the lived experience of someone else, to be able to account for the fact that there can be more than one truth. And dare I say it, through therapy, certainly, to get to a point where they realize actually that they can have more, they can become greater than the sum of their parts when they learn how to collaborate, when they learn how to trust and lean on others. So that's our gladiator. Sound familiar? Do you know any gladiators?
Yeah, I mean, funny enough, when you started talking, I thought, oh, maybe that's me, because, you know, I am determined and I am focused and I am competitive, you know, with myself and with others, but I don't like conflict. I really don't feel comfortable with that at all. And I think I am empathetic. So, you know, I wouldn't say that was my primary trait for sure.
And I suppose this is the really interesting point, isn't it, where we start to notice blends and we start to notice, yeah, that relates, not so much that. I think the subtlety there might be around the whether or not you put your needs ahead of others. That would be that kind of more gladiator-like blind spot.
I think I wouldn't trample on others. That would make me feel very uncomfortable.
So let's see how you feel about the next one. The next one is the hustler. So this is the third of our four profiles. This is the hustler. I heard an ooh there because this is that kind of charming manipulator. If I spell it out to you, this is the one. And I know so many hustlers, and I married a hustler. My best friend's a hustler. This is that person who has the most charming, charismatic ability to adapt to people, to work the room, to find compromises, to be flexible, to be creative, to be spontaneous. They're really great at the game. They're brilliant at the game. They tend to be popular. They're quite often extroverted, although not always. The reality is, though, that some of the less helpful qualities of a hustler is that they're not always authentic. Right. They're not always true to themselves. They say what needs to be said. They do what they think will earn them approval. They do what they believe others want from them. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of outsourcing of their okayness. If they can organize the reaction of the other person, they'll do what's required. So in that way, sometimes we can see the backlash of a hustler is this kind of manipulation.
I was going to say it sounds very manipulative, and it's one of my children springs to mind here, but I'm not going to say which one.
Oh, tell me about it.
Well, maybe they're all hustlers, you know, as they grow up.
Well, maybe they're all hustlers and you've just spotted one, and that's because the others are such bloody brilliant hustlers.
Yeah, could be.
So the thing about a hustler and that primary blind spot that I've talked about for each of the others, for a hustler, it's acceptance. That what a hustler struggles to do at times is accept themselves.
Right.
Accept their version of events. Accept their needs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That they don't have to persuade someone else to validate them. They don't have to coerce somebody into giving them what they want. They can state their needs directly. They can accept themselves as a human being, not a human doing. They have a package of feelings and needs that are valid all by themselves. Mm. So self-acceptance is often something lost in a blind spot for a hustler. Mm. And sometimes they've got so good at it. That's the thing, because they can be so charming that they've grown up being praised for some of their hustling. And as a result, of course, that becomes attached to their identity. And then it's scary, the idea that you're going to tell someone straight how you feel and what you need. But of course, that is what self-acceptance.
Risk a negative reaction.
Yeah, risk a rejection. Mm. So much of it is about protection. And when we come back to blind spots more broadly, it really is about this: how can the brain protect us by avoiding risk, by avoiding rejection? So these blind spots, I always talk about how they're certainly not there. A hustler is not out to you know, gaslight and hoodwink you. They're out to try and protect themselves through this shortcut that they've learnt without even realising.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I have a lot of love for a hustler.
Yeah. You've got to love a hustler.
Got to love a hustler. And, you know, one of the chapters in the book is all about relationships. And I talked about the fact that I've married a hustler. And I think it's no coincidence. But, you know, my rock kind of invulnerable strength needed to have this kind of lightness and spontaneity of a hustler to come in and go, go on, let's book it, let's do it, let's try it, let's kind of play. Hustlers are really playful
and quite charming, I can imagine.
Oh my goodness, yeah, you'll know if you've been charmed by a hustler. they're busy people, hustlers, because they've said yes to everything and everyone.
Yeah, they'll take your wallet, but you know,
they will.
You'll give it to them with a smile and not really mind.
You will. You'll thank them for the opportunity. Okay, so how about then we move on and do this fourth profile, and then we'll see kind of where that lands. So our fourth blind spot profile is the bridge. And the bridge was the hardest profile for me to pin down and to kind of give a name. I don't say labels aren't so useful, but to give it a name, to kind of title it the bridge, I played with lots of different options. Was it going to be the passenger? Was it going to be the diplomat? I settled on the bridge because this is someone that's all about connection, collaboration, cooperation, linking, mediating, moderating, harmonizing. This is somebody who, let's say in a family system, is the one that can be easygoing, that goes with the flow, that can be adaptable and accept things as they come, that can be very easy to have around. They can be unchallenging in that way. They can make for a great team member because they won't take up space. This part of them could often make them more invisible in relationships, which, if I'm honest, is exactly what they want.
Right.
There's something about a safety for them in being invisible, something about a safety in being a passenger strapped into the passenger seat of life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, they're happy to do it. But sometimes they're not. And that's right. When we typically notice that blind spot for a bridge, because in that capacity, a bridge can become resentful. Mm-hmm. A bridge can become resistant, frustrated. They actually can frustrate the people around them, which is exactly the opposite of what they're trying to do. So I quite often talk about, I have a dear friend who's a bridge. If I try and make an arrangement to see her, whatever I suggest, yeah, no problem. Right. You know, it could be, I'll meet you on the moon, and she'd say, what time suits you? There's just something okay. about her desperation to make my life easier. Part of that, again, you know, is coming from a place of love. Of course it is. But part of it is because this friend and other bridges have in their blind spot their own power, their own agency, their potency. Right. So when we're talking about primary blind spots and bridges, power is the word. It's that, can I step into my own power, have my own voice and say, do you know what? The moon doesn't work for me on Thursday, but I'd love to go to the cinema. So sometimes that bridge actually, in an effort to not annoy anyone, frustrates the entire relationship.
Yeah. So is that a lack of self-esteem then, do you think?
I think it comes from a lack of self-esteem for sure. I think actually, if I'm honest, I think all four of them come from a lack of self-esteem.
Right.
But they defend against that lack of self-esteem differently.
Okay.
So this one with the bridge, it's that place of, well, am I actually allowed to say what I want, or do I just have to fit in? The hustler's a bit different, because even though they don't feel that ability to speak their needs directly, they know how to pull strings and work at the edges and get their needs met, you know, in a kind of slightly duplicitous way. Mm-hmm. Whereas that bridge just tends to go floppy. It's the more passive of the profiles.
It's really fascinating. And, you know, and I'm willing to offer myself up as an example.
If I came
to you as a client, you know, to find out what I'm missing about myself, talk about the missing bits, where on earth do you start? What's your kind of opening question?
I'd probably ask you what you already know. So if you were coming to me and let's say you had a dilemma, let's say you wanted to talk about a friendship, for example, I'd probably start to ask you what you already know, because as soon as you start telling me how you see the world, which is actually, of course, all you'll be able to tell me, as soon as you start telling me how you see the world, I'll get a sense of what your perspective is currently.
Yeah.
And maybe what some of those discounts are that you're making. So during, as I talk about these discounts in the book, there is a concept in transactional analysis, which is my original modality as a psychotherapist, which talks about the ways that we minimize or distort our realities. I love them, and I've used them, and I've built on them, and I've adapted them in a way so that I can put them into this blind spot context, because this is where Jackie Schiff and her team, you know, back in the 60s and 70s when they were talking about cathexis, the school of cathexis for TA, they would talk about people minimizing. So when someone minimizes, let's say you come to me and you say, yeah, I've got this problem with my friend, but you know what, it's no big deal.
Right.
That tells me so much. You might normalize it. That's another discount. You might say, I've got a problem with my friend. We all do.
Yeah.
You might tell me, one of the other ones that I love when I kind of hear it is this, when people relativize. So you might say, yeah, I've got a problem with a friend, but you know what? Worst things happen at sea. All of this language really helps me understand how you're protecting the view of your life right now and what I'm going to have to do to just gently introduce other perspectives.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, really interesting. I mean, I was thinking about the four characters here, the four blind spots, the rock, the gladiator, the hustler, and the bridge. I guess the one that I probably resonated most with was the rock. And I think it's because, I guess, running a business, being entrepreneurial, being responsible for others, bringing up five kids, you know, being kind of the mainstay within the family and the main provider, if I'm honest, you know, financially and emotionally and all of those things, I do get to squash my own feelings, You know, I get busy helping others. I'm quite happy to put everybody else first. And I if I have any vulnerability, and you know, I probably do, but I don't show it. I don't admit it because maybe I'm scared that if I do show that you know, it's all going to go wrong for everybody, and there's too much riding on it for me to even consider that for other people, because I'm carrying them as I go with myself. So therefore, you know, I myself, Liz, comes right at the bottom.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and this is the bit, isn't it? If anyone's ever listened to Best Friend Therapy, they'll know that once a season, poor Elizabeth is unwittingly entered into the role of guinea pig as I perform live therapy on her. We don't have that contract, Liz, so you're safe. But what I would say is that the kind of questions I might be asking would be, so you described yourself, I'll use my words, really as this like engine of this family and this business and this system. Mm-hmm. The interesting question would be, have you become an engine through those behaviors, or have you found yourself in this position with 5 children and a business and being the main breadwinner and being the one who's got the responsibility because earlier on you saw engines, or that mm-hmm. engine model was in front of you or praised? So it's almost like the chicken and the egg question.
Yeah, which came first there?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that for myself as a rock, because my mother's Swedish. There's a kind of Viking bloodline that runs through that means that whatever happens to you in life, you can probably resolve it with a wet paper towel or a deep breath. My dad was a vet. He's retired now, but he was a vet. And he said early on, actually, he had to find a way to switch off some feelings, to do what he had to do as a vet. You know, there's something about, for me, I grew up in a system where there were rocks around me. So not only did I get the model of here's how to be a rock, but I also didn't have anyone to coach me emotionally to say, hey, Emma, how are you feeling? Talk to me about that.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's very true. You know, feelings, maybe it's a generational thing too, because I'm, you know, I'm 60. And I think looking back, you know, my parents and their generation, nobody talked about their feelings. Nobody, you know, nobody even kind of gave you a sort of, well done, that's great, because that, you know, oh, that's going to make you a bit big headed, or, you know, don't get above yourself. And, you know, there was a lot that was just expected and nothing was talked about. And I guess, you know, when I think about my father, because my mother was very much the support act to my father, he was a naval officer and he worked his way up through the ranks as an engineer, which is, you know, was back then considered sort of quite lowly, to become an admiral and, you know, one of the most senior admirals actually in the country. And he had to do a lot of grafting for that and be very focused and very determined. I imagine squashing a lot of feelings along the way. So that was my role model, you know, in terms of work and success, without much attention, potentially, really looking back, I think, being paid to emotions at all.
Mm. And that's really important, Liz, because there's something in there. I mean, if I was just going to pick up on that idea that perhaps it's generational, even that could be an example of normalizing. Because there's a kind of, it was generational. Of course, I suppose when I look at it the other way, there are plenty of people who would say, it's generational. My mother was such a worrier. She was so anxious. That's why all we talk about is feelings and we never take action.
Right.
So it's interesting, isn't it, how we don't know what we don't know.
No.
My unique position that I get is, and I call it quite often the crow's nest, it's seeing these things that unless you work with clients from all walks of life all the time, you wouldn't necessarily know that those differences existed. But what I think is fascinating when you talked about your father, and even the very fact that he started as an engineer, I've called you an engine, there is something about hearing how the model that you got was to graft and, dare I say it, to struggle. Like actually there has to be a kind of push. There has to be something that's going to drive us forwards. And what happens when we push is that we often find ourselves in successful positions, if that's the model that you offered. Other people who have a struggle script, a struggle blind spot, were never allowed to make it. That was the message they had.
Yes.
We only struggle, we don't succeed.
Gosh.
And I know plenty of people like that.
Mm. Well, let's pause here and come back in a moment to talk in a bit more detail about how these blind spots impact various relationships, you know, continuing, I think, the theme with family and friends and colleagues and other halves as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So we are becoming so much more aware, aren't we, of how childhood shapes who we are as adults, as we touched on just now. And, you know, the effect that our parents have had on us. And, you know, I said earlier, I've got five kids, mostly grown up now. But, you know, I would love not to inflict on them my prejudices and, you know, preconceived ideas of what success looks like, for example. You know, I don't want them to feel that they have to behave in a certain way. So I guess it's not all just about ourselves, is it? It's about, you know, thinking about that next generation and perhaps breaking patterns of behaviour so they're not repeated.
Yeah. I mean, I stopped at two children, so I take my hat off to you. But there is something about recognising that you having this conversation, and I say this so often to clients when they say, what if I carry on these patterns? Mm. And I'll say, you having this conversation is quite possibly something that your parents didn't do.
Ah, for sure. Yeah.
Same for me. And had they had that conversation, something would be different automatically. It's like these unconscious processes, the minute they become conscious, the whole game changes. Suddenly these are kind of conversations and we dialogue our questions. We don't have to have the answers. Mm-hmm. We almost just have to know that we don't know.
So, you know, is there ever a point where it's too late? You know, the four of my children are adults now. Should we be having conversations with grown-up children to about this sort of stuff, to help them heal and to give a voice to what they might have found difficult in their childhoods? And, you know, perhaps in turn that actually would help ourselves to heal too. Or do you think it gets to a point where it's too late?
Well, maybe I could ask you. I mean, I don't know if your parents are still alive.
Yeah, they are, and elderly. They're in their late 80s, both of them.
would there be anything that they could say to you that would still feed your soul or heal something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you touched a nerve there. No, for sure. And I guess we never stop that, do we? We never stop that. I remember, I mean, this maybe is getting a little bit too deep here, but, you know, not having had a lot of affirmation growing up. And I think, again, it possibly, in my opinion, it might have been that generational thing. But I remember going out for lunch with my parents not that long ago, you know, maybe a few years ago. And my mother took a picture with the phone of my father and I, and he put it on the family WhatsApp. And his caption was something like, you know, out with my beautiful daughter. And I have to tell you that it nearly broke me reading that, because I had never heard those words come out of his mouth. And, you know, even though I was reading that in my late 50s, for God's sake, oh my gosh, it's hugely powerful. So I guess, okay, so you've made me answer my own question.
I did.
There. It's never too late.
Do you know
to
what?
Speak
it's
powerfully over our children.
Totally, totally. And I think something that I've kind of come to understand, you know, well, let's say for you, you have five children. Your five children all have different mothers.
Right.
The very nature of how you have mothered and who you have been at those different times and what you were dealing with your elderly parents or with your business or with your health or whatever was going on for you, your context will mean that each of your children has had a different mother. And I think that's also really important to recognize, is that we have a unique experience of our parents. So sometimes I will hear siblings and a sibling will say, it was fine. And the other sibling will say, I don't see it that way.
Okay, yeah.
And those are both true too. We have to make space for our children to have had different experiences of us as parents.
And I remember actually not that long ago, I went out for lunch with my former business partner, Kim, who's remained one of my best friends, knows my children very well. And I was talking about my eldest son and actually saying, you know, I was so proud of him and la 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 with what he's doing. And she just stopped me and she just touched my arm and she looked me in the eye and she said, have you told him that?
Ah.
And I it really caught me up short. And I thought, gosh, actually, do you know, you're right. I haven't. And I should. And I did. And I left him a voice message, actually, that very day. And, you know, we've never talked about it since. But I just think I know what the impact of that, if I had had that message from my parents earlier on, what that would have meant to me. And it was just that real reminder that, oh, my gosh, I have that within my power to gift that to my children, which I guess then is improving their self-esteem, which is helping to mitigate these blind spots and the effect that it might have, you know, the negative effect it might have on their lives.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if we really were going to push that rocky part of you, we might say, why not bring it up with him and say, can I check out with you what that was like when I sent that message? Because can I tell you why that was significant? You know, that whole backstory, because really that is the perspective that fills in the blind spots.
That's the trouble with you therapists, you know, you've always got to take that one step further.
Always that bit too far.
I just think you get to a point where you've sorted yourself out and then blow me, come along with another bit of homework that's like, really?
But this is it. So my dad, he can't believe that I make money off people's feelings. I mean, he just thinks this is absolute. He calls it a pyramid selling scheme.
No.
He does. I know, but he's a rock. What nonsense. And this is, is it any coincidence that I went into therapy? Probably not.
Oh my God.
But I do think there is something, when I think about my 10-year-old daughter now, we dialogue all the time. That's the bit that makes the difference for me. When I think about who I was as a 10-year-old, scribbling into my diary furiously because I had all the thoughts and feelings, I just didn't know what to do with them. But to have a conversation with her where I get to say, do you know what? I think I really screwed that bit up this morning, because when I dropped you off and we were late, that was half my fault.
Right.
And the fact that I dropped you into school, you know, huffing and puffing and saying, well, if you'd packed your bag last night like I asked you, that really was my stuff. And I want to own that. And she will say to me, yeah, I get it. And it was half me too. And for me, it's about, I use this phrase a lot with clients, show your workings out. You know, nice. Don't decide by yourself what your solution is. Actually let someone in and show them your workings out. And so much of the time, particularly around, say, rocks with vulnerability.
I was going to say hard for a rock to
right.
do that.
Right, really hard. Piece. Really yeah. hard to say to your son, I actually felt really vulnerable sending you that text because I didn't know how it would land with you. And I haven't brought it up with you. Mm. And can I take the risk to check out with you how it landed? Right?
Okay. So can we move this on then from family?
Definitely not.
No, I've taken it on board.
Moving on.
I just want to make sure that we crack through, you know, other things.
Well said, Rock.
I promise you. Okay, romantic relationships.
Yes.
Let's because I think a lot of people come into therapy, perhaps, I mean, this is my perception of it, because of a relationship breakdown or wanting to improve or better understand. Presumably that kind of significant romantic loving relationship is particularly fertile ground for pattern repetition.
Hell yes. I mean, I think we are fed that from such a young age that this actually all happens in our unconscious, you know. You can't help who you love. The heart wants who the heart wants. This idea that this is just falling head over heels and eyes meeting across a crowded room and the chemistry and it's bullshit. And the reality is that blind spots come up through romantic relationships, and more people divorce over what is not said than over what is said.
Yes, I absolutely relate to that.
Yeah.
I absolutely relate to that. You know, when I look back on my own divorce, which is probably getting on for 3 years ago now, so much was not said and has never been said.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I'm in a relatively new relationship now, which I'm very happy about. And my boyfriend also is you know, going through a divorce. And so it has been in a similar situation. And there's such commonality there of what has never been said.
Yeah.
And maybe now starting afresh, I am so aware of it and so alive to it and almost kind of preempting conversations. I mean, what advice do you have to people? I know a lot of people listening here may be in a similar situation, maybe starting afresh, maybe starting a new relationship in midlife, not wanting to repeat destructive patterns. Do you have some kind of golden rules here to help new relationships at whatever age?
Do you know what I quite often talk about is this idea that we kind of look for the missing piece in our puzzle and then we feel resentment towards it. And it's that second part that is crucial to get right. So if you think about whether it's your first marriage or if you think about your boyfriend, there is something about the thing that attracted you to that person in the beginning will often be the thing that breaks you up.
Wow.
So people's blind spots align. And let's say it had gone differently for me. I'm still happily married, but let's say I met my husband. As I said, he's a hustler. He shows up as this kind of laissez-faire, more relaxed, forgetful, but creative and fun-loving, playful, relaxed guy. I need that in my life because my rock has been missing that permission. But unless I can give myself permission to adopt actually some of his practices and behaviors, not as a native tongue, but as a second love language. Okay. If I can't do that, what's going to happen is I'm going to stop seeing him as relaxed and I'm going to start seeing him as lazy.
Yeah. Lazy and annoying. Too carefree.
Yeah.
Irresponsible.
Totally. Reckless, selfish.
Yeah, I get it.
Immature. Mm-hmm. That's because I never gave myself permission to say, do you know what? That's actually what I'm missing.
We need to mirror our other halves?
I think what we need to do is this idea of a second language. So we stay us because, of course, they've come to us for the bit that they needed too.
Right.
My husband needs someone who can run a diary and has some structure and can kind of keep the show on the road. And he, to his credit, poor thing, married to a therapist, has had to learn that actually I'm not here to be that missing piece for him. I'm here to model permission for him to pick up potency himself.
Is that why they say opposites attract?
Totally. They attract and then they repel unless we do the work.
Oh my gosh. So can you have a successful relationship with two people who are very, very similar in the beginning?
I think you can if they're very similar in so far as they're very open-minded and they bring perspective and they want to understand the other. It's more about, can I learn from the other than can I teach them the way?
Right.
And I think, you know, typically in my experience, the longest lasting relationships I see are often between two rocks. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they're the most successful. It just means they last because they don't have any feelings to get in the way and create that contempt.
That's a bit tragic.
Yeah. I know. But also, I mean, it works for them, right? And so much of this is also about saying there is no shade on anyone who has found a way of being that suits them. There is no shade on the generation before us who gave us what they had to give and didn't know what they didn't know. It's just about getting curious now. But the relationship coupling that I see most often is between either a rock and a bridge or a gladiator and a hustler.
I think my guy is a fellow rock.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, we both need to have perhaps a bit more permission to be less rock-like. You know, we've had to, I think both of us had to struggle and provide. And when you meet a fellow provider.
Exactly. You have a resource.
Commonality there, but totally. There is a resilience, but I think we also need, you know, as you said earlier, permission to be vulnerable. And to be vulnerable
with each other,
which is kind of something I'm learning to actually say, do you know what? This is making me feel really uncomfortable, or I'm just not sure about this. You know, those words don't come easily to me, if I'm really honest.
You know? And actually, even those ones you've used, that's a great step in the direction we need to go in. But what if it was actually, this is making me feel sad? This is making me feel scared? Because those are the real vulnerable feelings.
Yeah.
That if we can drill underneath uncomfortable or challenging, we get to hear, actually, do you know what, it's terrifying for me to lean on you because leaning on people hasn't worked well for me in the past.
Well, there was a great line in your book that I wrote down actually because it rang quite true. You say, if there's someone who frustrates you, perhaps it's because they pose a challenge to your blind spot. And I think, you know, that actually might apply a lot in the workplace. If we kind of finish by looking at relationships in the workplace and how we can improve those and recognize what blind spots might be holding us back, perhaps in our careers.
Yeah, I love that fact. You know, you're right. I do say that if there is somebody that particularly winds you up, just get curious as to whether there's something about that person that you would never give yourself permission to do or be, or whether they are reminding you of someone in the past that you are actively resisting in the present. So one of the kind of examples I'd have, I had a client this week who would tell me about, you know, they have this colleague and the colleague just speak over them in all these meetings. Right. And they're always the first one to kind of like, they push their ideas or they make demands. If they need time off, they take time off. And if they have a kind of a way that they want to do something, they'll change the system. And it infuriates my client because my client is so collaborative. She's a bridge. Right. She wants everybody to play nicely because she holds herself to that limited belief that she must play nicely. Mm-hmm. But what's brilliant, and of course it links a little bit to that romantic relationship idea, is that this colleague represents exactly the kind of perspective and alternative behaviours and options that my client could really benefit from. Mm-hmm. Just speaking up herself rather than nobody speak. Take your space. This is why for a bridge it's all about power, not over others, but over oneself. And I'll often have to say to her, because her greatest fear is that she becomes this kind of bullish, overbearing, dominant person that she dislikes. Mm. But I get to say to her, do you know what? Your muscle memory will always keep you collaborative. You can afford to stretch a little. You can afford to say, can I interject there? Or I hear what you're saying. Now I want to take a turn. Terrifying, but actually so liberating, particularly when you then find that the other person shifts their frame of reference too.
Yes. Well, lastly then, we talked at the beginning about how our brains are actually trying to be good to us and form blind spots to manage our expectations, you know, and protect us from danger or disappointment. But what effect does all this have on risk-taking, maybe our ability or our desire to try new things? I'm thinking particularly about midlife women who might know they want to start a new chapter. They might know they want to start a better second half, but, you know, they're afraid of breaking out of these well-worn habits that are comfortable.
Yeah, it's terrifying. The first thing I would say, it is terrifying. I think there is something about, I particularly think about this kind of perimenopausal anxiety that I have firsthand experience of, and how anxiety forms a really uncomfortable bridge between how things are and how we would like them to be. That's why I see anxiety as a helpful signal. We talked about what the body tries to tell us. When your body is saying, oh, I'm not okay with things the way they are, but I'm also not sure I'm okay with changing things.
Yeah.
That's where we can end up spinning our wheels and staying stuck. That's anxiety. It's like, we're not in gear, we're going nowhere, but we're revving really high, sometimes to the point that, you know, we're burnt out.
Yeah.
So what I would say is there are two options in life, to change something or to accept it. Right. That dangerous middle ground is where we resist it.
Okay.
So it is about saying, is this a change task? Do I need to change my expectations of myself? Do I need to change the people I surround myself with? Or do I need to accept that I am the way I am and I need more time to myself? Do I need to accept that I want more from a partner and that might look like the end of this relationship? Either way, the truth of that will help you get there further faster.
I think that is fantastic advice, actually. I'm kind of thinking of writing that and popping it up on the wall.
On a t-shirt.
Definitely. Emma, it's so great to chat, honestly.
Likewise.
And your book is brilliant. And I just think those four blind spots, rock, gladiator, hustler, bridge. I was going to say rock, paper, scissors there, but it's not.
Can do that.
Can do that too.
That's the sequel, actually.
Is it?
No.
And do you have dynamite? Because my kids always say that dynamite kind of blows up everything. But anyway.
Great idea. Oh, I can do a whole profile on dynamite.
Definitely a big blind spot. You know, the people that just blow everything up.
100%.
Anyway, 100%. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's a real pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I've loved it.
Well, I don't know about you, but I found that an absolutely fascinating way to approach a bit of self-reflection. And as I said, that simple phrase, change or accept, it's really simple, isn't it? You either change what you don't like, what you see, what's going on, or you accept it. So there, job done. Anyway, Emma, a huge thank you for your time. I do hope we get to chat again in the future. Well, I guess that all begs the question, are you a rock, a gladiator, a hustler, or a bridge? I would be so interested to know how you came to your conclusion. Do leave a comment. The best way to get in touch is on Instagram at Lizelle Wellbeing. I'm also there too, personally, at Lizelle Me. And I'm going to be doing a few more posts actually on my Instagram about the podcast to get these conversations going, because I just think it's so interesting to share comments and experiences after listening to a particular episode. Well, while you're there, I also want to know about your experience of aiming to live a better second half. Are you struggling to lose weight? Are you recently divorced? Are you still confused by HRT advice? Do let me know, because I'm going to be sharing everyone's thoughts and stories on an upcoming episode. And if you'd like to listen to that and all future episodes ad-free and 24 hours early, do remember that you can now subscribe to the Lizelle Wellbeing Show Plus. That's on Apple Podcasts for a very small monthly fee. Okay, until the next time we chat, go well. Goodbye. The Lizelle Wellbeing Show is presented by me, Lizelle, and is produced by Anushka Tate for Fresh Air Production, with additional production support from Ellie Smith.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.